Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course. That's the name of the show. The other name is Off Topic.
But this is football.
What you want? We've got a mighty hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you listen to this podcast too? And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss between the bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Aston, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too.
We sure hope you listen to this podcast here. Mountain West Connection Podcast, MWCConnection.com. That's our show tonight. Really quick off the top, check out our website, MWCConnection.com. It's where you can find all of our fun stuff. Twitter, MWCConnection. Facebook, Mountain West Connection. And really quick, I'm redoing this opening because Zencastr says to give them a plug if you use their service, so I am, but it's not what they want. If I'm going to start maybe paying for your service, how about you actually allow it to work completely and fully and not mess up on us? So, hey, thanks for that. But so the show, not a ton is lost, honestly. We got most of it in with me and Matt. You'll hear we start with the San Diego State-Wyoming game a little bit after we had to. It starts right about the basically the last drive or that final two-point play. That's where we pick it up. So the Boise State-UNLV analysis we had, well, lost forever. Well, actually, it's not lost. You can hear my half, so it's like a one-way conversation, but that's really boring. And again, Zencastr, get your act together if we're going to start, if I may not, but start paying for your service. But really quick, Boise State, UNLV, 42-25, Broncos won that game. Basically, the Jeremy McNichols show. Four touchdowns, 206 yards on the ground, another 22-yard catch in the air. Rebels, still without Lexington Thomas, had to have their rushing game led by quarterback Kurt Ballendeck. He had Xavier Campbell, who picked it up 60 yards. Charles Williams had 50. Overall, not bad, but they couldn't really get it done too much defensively or running the ball all that well because they're still missing Thomas there running the ball. But McNichols, man, I had a few guys ask me on Twitter early Saturday morning, so where did you stand? I know it was kind of like in comparison to, hey, give me some credit. Donald Pumphrey's not the only great running back in the Mountain West or even in the country. And part of it, what you guys may have missed, was me saying, or I'll just say it now, Pumphrey might be getting a little bit more credit because he's probably going to pass Ron Dane's all-time NCAA rushing record. Not to say he's not having a great year, but obviously he is. But I think that might be playing a little bit extra into it where he is getting a little bit more pub. But then again, like Andy Staples, or not Andy Staples, but who is it? Fox Sports, Stu Mandel keeps mentioning the past couple podcasts, a group of five or non-power. There's not that guy that people were like going after, like Kellen Moore, Ben Roethlisberger, Chad Pennington, all these guys, Jordan Lynch, Heisman finalist, even kind of kicking back to the Mountain West, Truckee Keaton and Taysom Hill, when they're supposed to be healthy, there's a big argument who's better. But it's kind of dropped off since. You have a lot of good guys. I mentioned in a tweet, like Logan Woodside, you have the Western Kentucky quarterback. A lot of good guys out there, McNichols, Pumphrey. But somebody asked me total yards. Let me give you guys a quick, because this game, whatever, it's UNLV lost. Boise State won big, as they should have. Rebels, it's tough, man. Without their wide receivers, Dalton Steed moved from QB to wideout. Did have one catch for 10 yards, but Andrew Price did his best, 3 for 65, and a TD along a 45, but it's basically Boise State kind of slowly strangling the Rebels into victory at home. Boise 10-1, 6-1 in conference. But really quick, ask for that yards from scrimmage, or all-purpose yards, I should say. If you go by yards per game, it's Christian McCaffrey of Stanford of 10 games, but at 205 per game. Very good. But total yards, really quick, we'll go to that because McNichols has played one more game at the moment. McNichols, Pumphrey, and McCaffrey, the only players over 2,000 yards. You have McNichols at 2,097, Pumphrey 2,058, and then McCaffrey, Stanford 2,056. McCaffrey does have a few extra return yards, but it's the two Mountain West guys at the top of the top of the nation, not even the conference, nation. Even Brian Hill is a top 15 guy in the total yards. If you look at like touchdowns, you have McNichols. I believe he still leads the nation in non-quarterback touchdowns, even more than Lamar Jackson in his rushing attempts, not including both because Jackson's a beast and he's doing quite well. But 2,000 yards right there for those two guys. And not even getting a sniff at Heisman. Pumphrey was, may not anymore after his we'll get to that later, but his not his typical performance, rushing for just about 70 yards and no touchdowns in the loss to Wyoming. But McNichols needs some credit, man. He's most touchdowns, like nationally by touchdowns. Let me pull it up really quick because, again, that game, whatever, the game's over. Boise won. Boise, we won't get into the scenarios into our preview show because I had to hustle along when I recorded the first part of the show. But when you look at rushing touchdowns, McNichols 22 over even over Lamar Jackson. He's tied with Will Worth of Navy with 22. But it's and then he had his four receiving touchdowns. You would think, I'm wondering if a conference title, if Boise does get there, that might allow McNichols to maybe get a bump and maybe if he has a big game and get into the Heisman race, maybe finalist or something. But I don't know. He's very good. There's the Mountain West is stacked. Brian Hill, Donald Pumphrey. Even if you look at New Mexico, Tarion Gibson. You have a lot of good guys out there that run the ball very, 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 very well in this conference. A lot of good players in the league. But, again, really quick, just this game. Boise, like, they just kind of strangled him. Brett Rippon didn't have a great game. Didn't need to. 10 of 20, 109. But that's all you got there. That's the Boise 42-25. Now you'll hear the rest of the show with Matt Kennerly hopping in as we jump directly into Wyoming San Diego State. Man, what a game. All right, final play. So they made it down, the Aztecs that is, made it down the field. One last play. I like, I kind of chuckle how people call this a Hail Mary. It's only 23 yards, wasn't it? Wasn't that the official measurement length?
It was... I'm looking at Hawaii right now. Yeah, it was 23 yards to Truxton.
What would you say Hail Mary is, 40 plus?
It's got to be at least 40.
This is just a lob pass in the end zone, pretty much, right?
Yeah, more or less.
So, you see this play, ruled incompletion because a guy dives in last second, natural call, but it ended up being a touchdown. So, it's 34-33. If you're the head coach of the Aztecs, you just drove 99 yards on the road, come from behind as the favorite, or not the favorite, excuse me. No, they were favored, yes. What would your play call be at the to maybe tie the game or try to win the game?
It would probably be to try to win up front and use one of my stable of running backs to get the 2 yards necessary for those 2 points.
My thoughts exactly. I figured because here's some more reasoning. Outside of you just driving down the field and killing the crowd, essentially, with that play, or that drive of plays, overtime does not suit Aztec's offense very well. Because 25 yards out, while they have a great kicker, long away from the days of Sheamus, who couldn't kick anything when he was their kicker a couple years ago, they actually have a good kicker who's, I think, a semifinalist for the Groza Award. So they got talent there, but you got to pass in overtime because it's 25 yards. You can't just run. And Aztecs, I don't know how much I would trust Chapman in overtime just because odds of him continuing playing very well like he did, I would say decreases every snap he takes a throw. That's a pass play. So I agree with you. Go for the win. The play call is terrible. I hated the play call.
Didn't everybody? Well, I mean, maybe Wyoming fans didn't, but didn't everybody else hate that gameplay?
Well, a couple things. Nobody blocked the guy who, I don't recall who it was, but there was somebody untouched, came in to get in Chapman's face. But he basically did a sort of a rollout, sort of a, not even a play action. What he wanted to do was roll to the right and find a receiver on that side. Instead, oh crap, there's a Wyoming guy untouched right in my face. Let me throw across my body as I'm rolling right to former quarterback and now tight end or fullback, whatever he is, Nick Bolton. Play was open. The pass was very well. Like, looking at circumstances, that was a pretty well thrown ball. Just a little bit out of reach of Bolton to get there. He was open. They had to play there, but I get the running game wasn't what you wanted it to be in this game. But you have Donnell freaking Pumphrey in the backfield. At least give a hard play action to do something. It was the laziest play call ever. Let me just kind of stroll out to the right side. Holy crap, let me chuck it cross field.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not only that. Like, I don't know if I would necessarily agree with your assertion that this Aztecs offense isn't fit for overtime. Like, I'm like you, where, you know, this is the kind of situation where you want to see coaches just go for the jugular, right? And I think that's what Rocky Long was trying to do. It's not necessarily even about Pumphrey, though. It's Pumphrey and Rashad Penny and Juwan Washington. You've got like three guys back there. Why not even do like a fullback dive with Bowden or something like that? To me, like if this team needs 2 yards, like
six, that is 6 feet.
You've got three guys in the backfield at least who can get them 2 yards to get those 2 points. That's to me. That's where my lack of understanding of the play call comes in, because, you know, the easy answer is to put ball in Donnell Pumphrey's hands, right? But you could put it in literally anybody else's hands. Trust your offensive line to get 2 yards, because if you look at what they did on the whole during the game, you know, Pumphrey, you know, he only had 76 yards on 17 carries, but that's still 4.5 yards per carry. That's like, there are certain teams in the conference that would kill to get 4.5 yards per carry.
Even if you take away his long of 24, it's still 16 for 42. That's still over 3 yards a carry, enough to assume he'd get those 2 yards.
Yeah. And I mean, even then, you know, Penny had an average of, you know, he averaged 16 yards a carry, although some of that is skewed a little bit by his long run. But this was a team that has an offensive line that opened holes more often than not. And so if you need 2 yards, why don't you trust your offensive line to do that one more time for you?
Yeah, bring in the jumbo package, man. Two tight ends, fullback, two running backs. Who cares if Wyoming knows what you're going to do? I think Rocky Long and they just outsmarted themselves on this play. Because they didn't, like, passing, I don't, if they pass, I probably still would have been questioning it. But there was no attempt to even give a play action to fake a handoff to Pumphrey. He's basically out there to be a decoy. I'm like, give him a play action, suck everybody in. Because had they done a play action, the Wyoming defender who came in untouched, he may have taken a step inward, and that could have freed up a second or so for Chapman to find somebody a better pass or an easier pass where he's not having to throw against his body running one way. Do something like that. I would have preferred a handoff, go off tackle, go behind the guard. You have a great line. You have tight ends. You have a fullback. 6 feet is all you needed. 6 feet to win, to be on your way and to one more step closer to the Cotton Bowl. Instead, let's try to do a little roll up to the right side and, oh, shoot, somebody's not open. And let's, like I said, chuck it cross field. And it nearly worked too. So, but man, you got to, Pumphrey's the best. I'd still argue Pumphrey's the best player on the field at any given time. Give him the ball.
Well, at least for this.
You're not having Kobe pass off to somebody. You know what I mean? He's taking the shot.
On this afternoon, though, he wasn't even the best running back on the field.
True, but more often than not, he is. I'm just saying, he's your guy. Go with your guy.
But, you know, we both talked about coming into this game, is Brian Hill finally going to have the performance against Aztec defense that we might have expected all along? And did same as he did against Boise, he answered the bell here too. You know, he had 31 carries, 131 yards, 2 touchdowns. And while he wasn't necessarily flashy, like, he continually got them the yards that they needed him when they needed them the most. So I think that that's a credit to him that, you know, all things considered, if you look at the time of possession, he figured significantly into that huge advantage that Wyoming ended up with. They ended up with the ball for almost 37 minutes as a whole.
Yeah, a little bit of that was the 2 touchdown returns by the Aztecs that helped them in this game big time.
Yeah.
The 2 kickoff returns. And so I looked at the numbers. Okay, you have that. And then Pumphrey, first and only lost fumble on the year. Luckily, Wyoming, or on the Aztecs end, Wyoming only settled for a field goal. They had, I think it was Tanner Gentry, pass corner end zone, ruled out of bounds. Could have been a touchdown instead of a field goal off that one turnover. But also, like, we talked about in the offseason, like, we're looking at these the weight for some of these linemen for Wyoming. They brought in the new strength coach, which I wish I had his name to give him more credit, but they packed on a ton of weight, and they were pushing around this Aztecs defensive line more often than the other way around. They were pushing and pushing, and Hill got yards. Sean Wick had one or two good runs late in the game. But and this offensive line is just beefy and just pushed around the Aztecs and helped Hill get – like, Hill didn't have a big game, like a big 50-yarder, 30-yarder. His long was 15. But he just kept bruising and pushing and was getting a yard or two before touched at times.
And if I'm not mistaken, they did it while also losing Chase Appleby along that front four as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they were already down Carl Granderson. Now they lose Appleby, who's another really significant cog in that lineman rotation. And, you know, the guys that are left really stood up. Like Kevin Prosser had, you know, 1.5 sacks. He was a big part of that
TFL
defensive success. So, there, I mean, there wasn't really one guy that had a standout performance. It was a lot of guys just taking care of their assignments. You know, like Lucas Waka had 8 tackles. Logan Wilson had 4 tackles. You know, Wingard and Epps in the secondary each had 11. They had 11 and 12 tackles.
Yeah, they led the team. Like, there were 4 different players who had a TFL and, or sack, and 5 had a TFL.
Yeah, so, like I said, this is, I think, a credit to the fact that Wyoming played well as a defensive unit to really keep the Aztecs, you know, in check on offense.
Yeah, and it's just a crazy game going back and forth. Like, Wyoming responded when they needed to after the, especially in the second half, they get the other kick six or pick or whatever kick return from, who was it, Jawan Washington, I want to say. Jawan Washington, J-U-W-A-N, had the other return. But this is just a game where Wyoming, we can't be surprised about what Wyoming does anymore. I'm more surprised at how the heck did they lose to Eastern Michigan, and how the heck did they lose to UNLV last week. Had they beaten both those teams, both winnable games, they would be ranked 18th in the country and on par, ready for that Cotton Bowl spot. But instead, had they beaten UNLV last week, they would be in line, possibly, if Western Michigan were to lose to Toledo this weekend, in line for that Cotton Bowl spot in a rematch versus San Diego State.
I think if you had told Cowboys fans before the season, though, that they could go into the final week with a chance at least playing for a conference title,
oh yeah,
they would have definitely taken that deal.
Yeah, they're undefeated at home as well. They're just cruising, man.
Yeah.
And then also, you know how I kind of joked about throwing the game for Aztecs? That apparently picked up steam by certain people late in this game.
Oh, stop.
including former Bronco and current New York Giant Dante Dion saying, Aztecs want to lose so they can avoid playing Boise State.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, I saw that too, which I thought was hilarious. But no, I'll just stop with that. Everybody,
I know. I brought it up because I wanted to have somebody else tell me how ridiculous it was, which I already knew. And you're not. No more discussion on that. All that happens now is this could be a rematch. We'll see. We'll get into the scenarios later on, and probably in our preview show as well. But kudos to Wyoming, who now beat two ranked. I'll say they're ranked because they're ranked in the AP poll. Wasn't Aztecs last week?
Yes.
First time ever, Wyoming, without looking up, I'll be confident, beat 2 ranked teams at home. Beat 2 ranked teams ever in a season, also, I believe, as well.
I thought I saw something where they did it back in, like, 1996 or something like that.
That was the last time they went to a conference title, when they lost to BYU in Las Vegas.
Oh, okay, well.
For the WAC title, but that's the only other year I'd want to look into, because they were really good that year as well.
Yeah.
But should we move on, I guess?
We're moving on to Nevada and Utah State.
Another last second play, man.
I know. Right?
So Utah State fans, apparently, I've tried to calm them down, but they don't like to listen to me very much. They are not reverting to pre-2008 Utah State.
Yeah, that's a bit of a stretch.
Because back in early 2000s, when they had like Brent Guy's red coach, they were basically playing, let's see, at Auburn, at Texas, at USC, at Oklahoma, at whomever, to get a payday. They were in the Sun Belt. They're in the Big West. They went independent. They were basically what who's laughing stock right now? Is it still Idaho? Can we still use him as an example?
Hey, but Idaho's bowl eligible. I don't know.
I know. I'm just saying, like, this is basically
Massachusetts.
There we go. UMass. Yes, that's a good example. They're sitting at 2-9. where they were, Utah State fans were thrilled if they were to get to four wins, if they were to sniff four wins with four home games on their schedule.
Yeah.
This is not happening. Yes, it's a big step back, and Matt Wells is in trouble if he doesn't make a bowl game next year, but, and I also, people are like, well, there's coordinator turnover. Well, I don't think it's all Matt Wells' fault, because they had Josh Heupel, who just left for no reason last year, just because. They did lose coaches with Gary Anderson at Oregon State. Their former DC is now at Houston. And so some of these are going for better jobs, but that's part of it too. But you're fine. Utah State, you're, well, I shouldn't say you're fine, but the wheels aren't falling off this thing anytime soon.
And I mean, with this particular game, in, you know, this, in a lot of respects, this was a really weird game. Like, I wasn't able to watch a lot of the Aztecs and Cowboys game, admittedly, because, you know, stupid CBS Sports Network. So,
yeah, I couldn't stream on my app on DirecTV after I could 2 weeks ago. What's up with that?
So if you look at the box score of this game, you might not guess that Utah State was the one that lost this game, because they had a huge advantage in total yards. You know, we talked, we both talked about how the fact that, you know, if this running game is going to show up, now's the time to do it. The Aggies ran for almost 400 yards on 8 yards a carry.
Rashad Lewis got into action, man. 4 for 83.
Well, not only that, but like Tawny Lindsey had his best game of the year by far. You know, he had 168 Ooh. Yards and a touchdown. Kent Myers sure had 90 yards and 2 scores. So they got the job done on the ground, and they held, you know, pretty, you know, they were able to find big plays pretty much all over the field. Like, I'm trying to look up, they had 13 running plays of more than 10 yards, which is far and away their best figure of the entire season. So
yeah, 3 over 35 too.
But the, you know, but Nevada, their secondary really stepped up and kept them from finding big plays in the passing game. You know,
Damian Bobber, because, you know, 2 pass deflections.
And, you know, Myers got it done as a runner, and that's a credit to him. That's kind of what I've been saying for more or less the past month, at least. But, you know, he may have left player two on the field. He was only 10 of 18, 127 yards and 1 interception.
So neither team's going bowling. So I assume both coaches will be back, because some people don't want Brian Poling back either.
I think if he loses the Fremont Cannon, he's gone.
Because they went bowling last year.
They did. Against another Mountain West team, if you recall. I mean, it's kind of hard to see how Nevada won this game.
They scored 21 fourth quarter points. That's
how. Tells me, you know, and you know how they did that is the fact that, you know, again, like we talked about with Boise and UNLV, you know, Nevada on average started at their own 44 yard line. And if you look at what they were doing, especially in the second half, you know, they're, or in the fourth quarter especially, like they had the interception off of Myers and they started at the Utah State 20 and they turned that into 7 points. And then they recovered that a fumble for a touchdown. Fumble. And then, yeah, and then the game-winning drive was one that they started at right around midfield with 1.5 minutes to go. So, yeah, I mean, Utah State probably, as well as they played, you kind of have to say that they gave the game away
a little
more
bit,
because
they go after that fumble for touchdown. They go 3 and out. Another breakup play. Myers tried to go to Ronquavo and Tarver, but he had a Rufus part-time QB with the well, there's a penalty to climb, but a pass broke up as well. So that then here's the thing: Utah State another chance. Nevada goes 10 plays, have a huge drive. They're down. It's 37-31. Nevada moves down the field all the way to the Utah State 5-yard line. They don't get it. 4th and 4 at the 5. They throw a short pass to James Butler, gets stuffed. I'm like, okay, Utah State's got this game. They're gonna win after that huge defensive stop. 3 and out again. It's like, come on, you goal line stance. And then being that deep, you get out to the 9-yard line. So like you said, Nevada gets the ball at midfield and they had another good drive.
Yeah, I mean, this one's going to be even harder for Utah State fans to get over, man. I think, than the last one.
And yeah, fourth, I forgot about this. This is a 4th down touchdown as well. Basically the same part of the field at the 6-yard line. Yeah. It's a Ganji run that gets him in there. It's like, oh, come on. So is Matt Wells, is he, if he loses to BYU, is he going to be safe next week?
I mean, if it were me making the decision out there in Logan, I'd say, yeah, I would give him another year to kind of see how things shake out. Because like I said, this, like I said many times before, this isn't a team that's devoid of talent by any stretch. You know, if you start looking at their schedule as a whole, like this is 2 weeks in a row now where they've lost by 1 point. And those, you know, one score games, those really close matchups can,
yeah, they could be, you know, sitting
change dramatically from year
5
to year.
And 7, 5 so and 6 if, being bowl eligible next week if they beat BYU.
Yeah, so I mean, it's maybe they've been a little bit unlucky in some respects, but I think that when you go back and look at the fact that, you know, they lost what, 3-4 conference games by one score. You know, that's
why I also say he's fine, because you're not getting blown out like you were years ago, and you're not winning 3-4 games at best.
Yeah, and it, you have a lot of talent coming back, so I would, like I said, patience. It's, I mean, it's tough to lose these close games, but in the long run,
if things gone their way, like the Air Force game, there's questionable officiating. They could have won all 4 of those games. Honestly, they could be not. That's, I know it's probably too optimistic, but 7-3 instead. You know what I mean? Or 7-4.
It's not outside the realm of possibility if, like, things, if one or two things go differently from week to week.
Yeah, different
conversation. This is an entirely different season for
them. I think they're fine. Boosters like Matt Wells because he's alumnus of the school and everything, but I think they're going to give him, this is his first year he hasn't gone bowling, and first year Utah State hasn't gone bowling since, what, 07, I think. So, it's okay. All right, next game. I wish I had the sad trombone ready because Hawaii beat Air Force, or excuse me, beat Fresno, 14-13, blocked field goal for Hawaii to get to victory.
In a game that I'm pretty sure no one actually saw.
Which wasn't many either.
Yeah. I live 5 minutes. Yeah. How much do we really want to talk about this game? Because this is just kind of a sad
off. Let me give you some positive here for Fresno. They ran the ball pretty well. Better than they have been.
They did. They had to pull a guy from the linebacking core to find a running game.
He's a linebacker. I did not realize that because, again, I couldn't watch the game because I'm not in Hawaii or in Fresno. Wait. Local kid? Hey, they have a local kid on the team? For real?
Yeah. Ooh, also a wrestling commit. He's going to wrestle, I believe, next year. But, you know, they put him in the backfield and he ran for 97 yards. And that, to me, is probably the most pleasant surprise. But at the same time, though, they went with Zach Klein as quarterback. And if you're wondering how well that went,
no,
it did
over 50% completion percentage. Hey,
yeah, but you know, he had 108 yards on 23 attempts. And going into the last drive, which we'll get to in a minute, but going into the last drive, I went back and I did the math. He had, through roughly 57 minutes of play, he had 62 passing yards. So if you're wondering how I feel about the quarterback change, just think about what I just said for a minute and just connect the dots yourself.
It
wasn't good. And I don't understand why they didn't.
They should stick with Chase and Virgil. At worst, I need to get the season's over, split some time, but Eric Kiesel, I don't even think he's going to be on the staff next year. Maybe he's doing a big FU to whoever, but my thought was, with Tedford in the program now, new head coach, Jeff Tedford, he would say, let's see who we have for next year. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to bowl game. You're 1-10. This is, I believe this is Fresno State's worst season ever. Is that possibly correct?
This is the first time since the program started playing football in 1921
that they've lost 10 games. It's a great depression. They've never lost 10 games. Ever. Okay. Well, I just like that in there because 1921, but still, it makes me sound smarter a little bit by saying something else. But ever. Jeez.
Like, this is literally the worst team in Fresno State history, and it's official.
I thought, like, with Tedford there, I figured, yeah, see what Virgil has. I want to see him up close, see him live in action, but I guess not.
You would think. And then, of course, you know, in the same thing, I mentioned it in the recap, and I'll just mention it here. is that the game really turned on Fresno State's second to last drive when they got to the Hawaii 10-yard line with about 4 minutes to go. And for some reason, they decided to throw it on second and third down instead of taking more time off the clock.
Did they get any points out of that drive?
And so
okay,
they got 3 points out of that drive. But you know what? That gave them a 6-point lead. And Hawaii, which hadn't really done all that much to date, and if you look at, you know,
I feel bad for the defense. Was excellent.
Let me just start with there, because the front seven played by far its best game of the year, because, you know, the three-headed running back attack that Hawaii has, they had, I believe it was 67
yards.
Well,
if you take out sack yardage, yeah. Period. Hey, Stephen Lakalaka had a Jerome Bettis type line, yeah. 4 for 11, 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you know, they kept Drew Brown and they kept all of his playmakers in check throughout most of the game. And then all of a sudden that last drive, they can't buy a stop to save their lives, which, you know, go figure, they get down to, they get into the end zone with about a minute left. And if you had just chosen to run the football, because at that point you'd already run for over 200 yards as a team, you know, not only between Hogut, but, you know, Klein, even though he wasn't a great passer on the day, he did have 52 yards rushing. Dontell James contributed with 49 yards of his own. So it wasn't spectacular, but it was still your best performance running the football all year long.
Oh, that could have been.
And it's just, I don't know.
It is. Even had they not got a first so down, dumb. That's 40 seconds off the clock, probably.
And then the defense, you know, they get Hawaii into a 3rd and 25.
I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry.
Back where they started their drive, basically. Like Hawaii got a first down and then they got called for a penalty. So they went backwards and they managed to work their way out of it. And then 4th down inside the red zone, you know, Tyquan Glass, I believe it was, makes this, you know, defense against the pass and they get called for roughing the passer on 4th and 6. Yeah, this is just a team that is bad, first of all, and they were maybe a little bit unlucky, and just,
let me ask you this.
I don't even know what else you could say at this point. Yeah. They'd have a chance at the end, too. Let's not forget
that. Is a 43-yard Cody Cronin attempt out of this guy's range, really? Yeah, it was blocked. So it means it's kind of driving kick. I saw a couple of highlights, but nothing was really great, but it seemed like more of a, you're that far back, you're going to more line drive it than arch it up, but it just that block just describes the Fresno State season in a whole. You do a few good things and then you get screwed at the end. All right, let's move on to the next game. So let's maybe get you a little more happy here. Where do you want to go next?
Let's talk the about Hughes Colorado State.
Farewell. Whew, that was a shocker.
That's a way to go out, you know. 49-31 over New Mexico. Taking the Lobos out of the conference race. I mean,
I don't have all the details, but there could be a 3-way tie, which means they're in the mix. I don't think they'd be in it because division losses matter more, but they could be a technically tri-division champions.
But, you know, they beat New Mexico at their own game. If you
run the ball, Bobo, that's what
you
do.
This was, run the dang ball, Bobo. And you know what? They did. And they ran it, you know, Daylon Dawkins, Izzy Matthews, and Marvin Kinsey all went over 100 yards. And it wasn't as though they had like 20 carries apiece. You know, Matthews had 14. Dawkins had 10. So did Kinsey.
9.8.
They averaged, 9.8. What, 8-9 yards per carry. As a team, they averaged almost 10 yards a carry. And that was almost double what New Mexico managed on their own. You know, New Mexico still had 6 yards carry, which is pretty good for them.
Tyron Gibson was held to 68 yards, 4.5 a carry, long of only 11, which is probably, I would say is the reason Rams were able to do so well, because as I've always said, there's a huge game. In this game, it was Tyron Owens, 79 yarder, but Gibson was held to a long of 11, and he's not a back just to chip you away 5, 6, 7, 8 yards, 2 yards, 3 yards. He's a guy who'll go 2 yards. Barry Sanders, essentially, a couple yards here or there, 50-yard run to make up the yardage. He did not break out that big run. they played okay, but they were held about 100 yards under their average. And you hold, like I say, if you hold Gibson down, anybody, like even Owens, 157 yards, 13 yards a carry. I always say if you hold Gibson down, you're going to beat New Mexico, and they did.
Yeah, and I mean, on the flip side, when Colorado State's running as well as they did, like they hardly asked Nick Stevens to do anything, but when they did, he probably had his best game of the year too, even though he only threw the ball 10 times, because he averaged 16.4 yards an attempt. A lot of that is a credit, I believe, to Michael Gallup, who went over the 100-yard mark again, had a touchdown. I think it's pretty safe to say he atoned for last week's error.
After, yeah.
Would you agree? I mean, this was just like...
Like you said, but this is exactly like you said. This is what like, the Rams, if you look at the box score, and you told me this game, I would without the teams, I would say the Rams box score is what New Mexico normally is or wants to be. Maybe not the passing yards, exactly. But 9 of 10, 2 scores. Yeah.
And then, you know, good on Colorado State. I believe that makes them bowl eligible now.
Won their final game at Hugh Stadium, and they're good to go. They're Lobos. They're going bowling, which is a great season for Lobos, but we'll talk about this offseason, but quarterback issues, not issues, but more intrigue, I would say, with Nick Stevens there. Colin Hill. So let's move on to the next game. So we've got to wrap this up here. Final game, Air Force San Jose State. Air Force won 41-38, by the way. That's the final score. But
would it be more fair to say it was the Air Force Falcons versus Kenny Potter?
Yes, 100%. Yes.
Because that guy did it all, pretty much. You know, he had 340 yards passing. He was the team's leading rusher, although it was only 52 yards, but still. But that's skewed even by the fact that, you know, he was sacked by Air Force 5 times. So I want to look up real quick exactly how many yards he lost on sacks, because my guess is he was probably a lot closer to 100 yards as a runner. Yeah. So this was basically the Kenny Potter show, and he did.
But on the other side, he had Ariana Worthman, career high, 215 yards rushing. No, this is just a weird box line, too, for Air Force, because he ran 28 times. Jacoby Owens, only 9 carries. Tim McVay, 9 carries. DJ Johnson, 6 carries. Yes, they averaged over 7 yards a carry, 458 on 63 attempts, but you usually see a guy near 30. And then 10, 12, 15, like most of the guys. But Wortham, man, he did not want to give the ball up at all. He's like, I'll just fake the option here and just keep going. They cannot stop me. And he willed them to victory, essentially, with the just outscoring, as Potter did. He had 3 total touchdowns, outscoring the Spartans pretty much.
Yeah, and I mean, they almost had it at the end, too, because they... I'm trying to look at the drive chart real quick because I was looking it up earlier. They get the ball back at their own
Aztec drive
1 yard line off of an Air Force fumble. So they have a chance to, you know, to march down the field and, you know, protect their lead. I believe they're up 38-34 at this point. All they need to do is chew up clock. And they get the ball back at a minute 39. And they go 3 and out. And, you know, Air Force starts their game-winning drive at, you know, the San Jose 33-yard line. You know, I think that was probably an instance where you would have hoped Michael Carrizosa could give them a little bit of breathing room.
Dude, how far? That punt must have been awful. That's a 37-yard punt. Come on, man. Michael Carrizosa? Come on.
Yeah, and I mean, with a 5-yard attempt or something like that. Yeah, it was a little bit of a disappointing game for him, I think, overall, because he averaged less than 40 yards.
I get back in the end zone a little
punt.
Bit, but yeah, I get to midfield there at least.
Yeah, and so I think that, you know, the fact that San Jose State almost stole this game from the Falcons is a credit to the fact that, you know, they still have a pretty good quarterback at least. You know, the running game outside of Potter was more or less non-existent. And, you know, we've basically talked week in and week out about the fact that they've struggled against stopping the run. And when you see your linebackers piling up the tackles like San Jose State did, I believe all three of their starters, Aguayo, Frank Gindutch, Christian Tago, had at least 13 tackles apiece. So you're asking them to do a lot as a unit, and I think they answered the bell about as well as you could ask, you know, as much as you could ask of them. Kind of a tough break for them at the end.
And then, of course, Weston Stillhammer gets a pick off of Potter to seal the victory. Well, yeah. That's our show for tonight. Really quick, we do have some breaking news, depending on when you hear this. It could have an impact, but Charlie Strong is, according to the Austin American Statesman, out. Of course, it's Tom Herman. Come on.
Who do you think they would bring in?
That's what was mentioned Thursday night after the victory. Boosters on the phone to... is it still Lost Dodd? Is he the AD still, or is it somebody else? Whoever it is, but he's like, give me the AD's number in Texas. Give me his direct line. I got it. Let me text him. Hey, dude, get Tom Herman in there now. He lose the freaking Kansas in overtime. But this could have an impact, because if it is Herman, that opens up Houston, and weird things happen. So I don't know if any coach will go anywhere from the conference right now. Like, Carson's probably not going anywhere. Rocky Long's going to retire there. Unless there's firings, but that's just something to look out for, because it could have coordinators issues as well, depending where Houston grabs their coach from. But we'll see. But I want to bring that tidbit up. Really quick, I guess we'll talk about the schedule. We'll talk about the schedule and the scenarios next week, because that's more fitting for next week's show. But all we need to know right now, really quick, Wyoming wins, you're in. That's all that matters right now. There is, starting Black Friday. We'll have our preview early next week. Anything else you need to add really quick? Or we are set. No hoop show again because of Thanksgiving. And me and Eli are not going to do that on Thanksgiving. They'll give us more time to look at more games. But that's our show for tonight, football-wise. MWCConnection.com is our website. SoundCloud, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, all those fun places. Go to Pocket Cast or whatever you use. But we'll see you guys next time. Thanks for listening. And as always, hey, we are biased against your team.